This is VOA News. I'm Victor Beatty. Venezuela's new banknotes, minus five zeros, entered circulation Monday in a bid by the government of President Nicolas Maduro to tame hyperinflation, forecast to reach 1,000,000% by year's end. Reforms implemented include a 3,000% increase in the minimum wage, a hike in gas prices, and anchoring the new bolivar to the petro, a cryptocurrency.
Ajustar los salarios.
The president of Venezuela's business organization, Fedecamaras, Carlos Lazarabel, said the wage hike is unmanageable for an economy in grave depression. Analyst Raul Sanchez Urubari of Australia's La Trobe University said for the average Venezuelan, there's a great deal of uncertainty.
Out of a combination of, on one hand, the brutal nature of the measures themselves, as you know, and on the other hand, uncertainty with respect to its implementation, we start the week in Venezuela, based on what I know, with a very cautious and almost fearful start. Lots of concerns about what's going to happen in the short and mid-run.
Venezuelans, meanwhile, fleeing their country, continued to enter Brazil despite a spike in anti-immigrant sentiment there. Extra troops on hand following violence which occurred Saturday. Ugandan police used tear gas to disperse a second day of demonstrations in the capital, Kampala, over the beating and detention of opposition lawmakers. Dozens were arrested. Emilian Kayima is a police spokesman.
We ask all Kampalans and all Ugandans not to engage into these riots because, as we say, they are unlawful, they are unacceptable, they are criminal actions.
Lawmakers arrested a week ago on suspicion of taking part in the stoning of the presidential motorcade. This is VOA News. In India's southern state of Kerala, monsoon rain floodwaters are finally receding, revealing a grim picture of the toll of days of torrential rains. Nearly 400 are known to have died in one of the region's worst floods in a century. This man says it will take at least a month for the water to drain. Only then will we be able to return to our homes. Nearly 750,000 people are sheltering in relief camps. Military personnel have been deployed to rescue those stranded by floodwaters, clear debris, and distribute food and water. In Italy, at least 8 hikers were killed when a mountain river suddenly flooded in the southern Calabria region. 5 are still missing. In the Russian region of Chechnya Monday, militants staged a series of attacks on police targets, with Islamic State claiming responsibility. The Chechen Interior Minister Ruslan Akhanov said the criminals failed to destabilize the situation thanks to the quick response of law enforcement. 3 separate attacks were launched at a police station, a police post, and against 2 traffic officers. All the attackers were killed, 2 policemen were wounded. In North Korea, the sound of some 90 families from North and South Korea holding tearful reunions, the first of their kind in 3 years. These elderly relatives have been divided by the Korean War. 3 days of such reunions are taking place at the North Korean resort of Mount Kumgang. A U.S. military service member was killed late Sunday when a helicopter on a mission targeting Islamic State militants crashed in Iraq. An investigation has been launched as to the cause. Several other soldiers were injured. The Health Ministry of the Democratic Republic of Congo said Monday at least 55 now have died from the latest outbreak of the deadly Ebola virus, with nearly 70 confirmed cases.
Jusqu'à présent, il y a déjà 10.
Meanwhile, Jean-Jacques Mayumbe of the National Institute for Biomedical Research says patients are benefiting from a new Ebola vaccine, MAB-114, which he said all 10 patients given one injection have improved. He said 5 other drugs have been approved by the World Health Organization. U.S. and China trade negotiators are getting together this week amid trade tensions between the world's 2 biggest economies. That was enough to boost investor confidence and power the market Monday higher. The benchmark Dow Jones gaining nearly 90 points to close at 25,758. Again, the hour's top story, Venezuela's new banknotes, minus 5 zeros, entered circulation Monday in a bid by the government of President Nicolas Maduro to tame hyperinflation, approaching 1,000,000% by year's end. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Mbatha in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Pressure mounts on Uganda's government to release batter and detain parliamentarian Bobi Wine.
We have advised that if Mr. Museveni really is sure that Honorable Bobi Wine is well, why have they up to now refused his personal doctor to accept him? Number two, why are they refusing the media and the general public from accepting him?
Asuma Basaliwa is a lawyer for parliamentarian and musician Bobi Wine. Zimbabwe opposition appeals for regional help as the High Court is set to hear its election petition tomorrow, Wednesday. Sierra Leone's president has officially launched the country's free education system, and the chair of the regional peace efforts in South Sudan is reportedly stepping down.
He could have done this much earlier than now. But now that he has done it, we are so happy that he has done it. Even if he has not done so much, really, but we appreciate his kindness.
Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel is the deputy military spokesman for South Sudan's rebel SPLA-RO. Mozambique journalists will start paying perhaps the highest registration fees beginning this Wednesday. And U.S. First Lady Melania Trump will make a solo trip to Africa this October. Those stories plus our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Lawyers for detained popular Ugandan parliamentarian Bobi Wine have petitioned the country's Human Rights Commission to pressure President Yoweri Museveni's government to allow the lawmaker's personal physician to visit him. The request came after a military court last week charged Bobi Wine, a famous musician, with illegal possession of firearms and ammunition. The court said Bobi Wine will continue to be remanded until August 23rd. His lawyer said he was assaulted while being held by the authorities. President Museveni has described the accusations as fake news. Meanwhile, supporters of Bobi Wine on Monday clashed with state security officers in Kampala and other cities across Uganda. Asuma Basiliwa is Bobi Wine's lawyer.
There is a lot of tension in Kampala arising out of the continued detention of Honorable Robert Chagulanyi, popularly known as Bobi Wine. There are protests around the country, in Kampala itself, and other parts of Uganda, in Mityana, in Jinja, which protests have been triggered as a result of the continued detention of the Honorable Bobi Wine.
The president is saying that you and other supporters are to blame for spreading fake news, the reason behind the ongoing clashes, supposedly in Kampala, between supporters of Bobi Wine, the police and the military.
Well, I think the president has not been given the correct information in as far as the Honorable Bobi Wine is concerned. And we have advised that if Mr. Museveni really is sure that Honorable Bobi Wine is well, why have they up to now refused his personal doctor to access him? Number two, why are they refusing the media and the general public from accessing him? Number three, there is a practice in Uganda of parading suspects before the media involuntarily. Why haven't they paraded the Honorable Bobi Wine before the media? So the fact that they are concealing him, the fact that they have not allowed his personal physician to access him, means that there is something which is not right. So we challenge Mr. Museveni, we challenge the government to come out and allow the Honorable Bobi Wine access his personal physician. The only credible information we will get on the health status of Mr. Chagulanyi is that which will come from his personal physician. Because Mr. Museveni has not seen a Honorable Bobi Wine. He's being fed on information which is not accurate. Those of us who have seen Bobi Wine know that he's in bad shape and he needs urgent medical attention.
Well, some reports on social media platforms in Uganda are suggesting that over 70% of his organs have failed. And President Museveni is saying that the report he got from the UPDF, the military doctors, suggests that Mr. Bobi Wine is fine and that those people who are spreading such false rumors are to blame for the ongoing confusion and clashes between the security forces and supporters of Bobi Wine in the country, and that supporters of the ruling party are saying some of you should be arrested for creating such confusion in Kampala and beyond.
We have no problem being arrested, but for us, we are giving one challenge. And it's really very simple. Let Bobi Wine be produced to the public. Let the media access him. Let his personal physician access him. Why are they hiding him? Because the only way of taking away these allegations, these rumors, the misinformation, is by producing him before the public. Let them arrange and the media accesses him. Let them arrange so that his personal physician visits him.
What do you say to supporters of the NRM, the ruling party, who are saying that since Bobi Wine is being charged, he doesn't enjoy the same legal room like other criminal offenses, and that is why he cannot be paraded just like anybody else?
Well, but first of all, he's not being charged with treason. He's being charged with illegal possession of firearms and live ammunition. Number two, we have seen people who have been charged with the worst offenses are being paraded before the media. One of them is Jamil Mukuru, who was the commander of the Allied Defense Forces, which had been declared a terrorist organization. He was paraded before the media, and even those who participated in the bombings of Kampala during the World Cup were paraded before the media. So why has it become very difficult for government and the military to allow the media access Bobi Wine?
Asim Mbasaliwa is lawyer for Uganda and parliamentarian and musician Bobi Wine. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotte from the capital, Kampala. A spokesman for the military wing of South Sudan's rebel SPLAIO says the group is happy about reports that the facilitator of the regional peace efforts in South Sudan has decided to step aside. The Kenya Daily News paper reported Monday that former Botswana President Festus Mohai, who is chair of the Joint Monitoring and Evaluation Commission, who was JMEC, has decided to step aside. The rebels and the Juba government signed a revitalized peace deal earlier this month. The paper quotes Mohai as saying he was pleased with the level of the peace process and wanted to turn the next phase over to fresh hands. But Colonel Lam-Paul Gabriel, deputy military spokesman for the SPLAIO, says the rebels are happy because they have never been satisfied with Mohai's handling of the peace process.
He could have done this much earlier than now. But now that he has done it, we are so happy that he has done it. And we really appreciate it. Even if he has not done so much, really, but we appreciate his time.
So why do you say that he could have stepped down earlier? Are you saying that the SPLAIO has not been satisfied with the way former President Mohai conduct the peace process?
That is true. Since 2015, when it was signed, we sent our advance team to Juba in December, followed by the deployment of our military forces in March 2016. But there has been a lot of call from us to make sure Juba get demilitarized. Festo did not make sure Juba was demilitarized. And that led to the coup that the president staged again ISIS and the people of South Sudan when he tried to assassinate Dr. Riek Machar in Juba. Everything was staged and it was open. It could even be seen by a person there that Juba was planning to assassinate Dr. Riek and wipe out the SPLAIO in Juba. But instead of warning or maybe telling Juba to stop all this evil plan against Dr. Riek Machar and the SPLAIO, he let them continue with it, and until it exploded in July 2016, he should have done much better than that. He knew it was going to that, but he kept quiet. Even after when we were forced out of Juba by Salva Kiir, we have been complaining to him. I believe Dr. Riek Machar called him several times to make sure he restrained. He had got the authority to restrain Salva Kiir, but he kept quiet. He let it go. Even he blessed Tabandenga when they decided to put Tabandenga as the first vice president to replace Dr. Riek Machar. So we are not satisfied completely. Even up to now, we are not satisfied. When the war continued after that, in 2017, up to early this year, President Mugai was still saying Juba was peaceful. How do you call Juba peaceful when there was war going on? So he succumbed to the pressure from the regime in Juba.
In response to maybe your argument, he said he realized that there were some misgivings in the way the peace process started, but he was able to revitalize the failed agreement, which led to the recent agreement. So he feels that it's time for him to step down and let somebody else now take it from there, because now the peace process is on the right course.
I don't think the revitalized peace agreement that is coming closer, it was because of him. No, I really don't believe that. But it was because of the zeal and the strength of the SPLA to resist the government in Juba. That was why we were able to influence the decision of the international community, the IGAD, to make sure they released Dr. Machar. They allowed the peace process to go throughout. And right now, we are seeing peace coming closer. But it wasn't the initiative of President Mugai. No, I don't believe that. Because of our pressure, we are seeing peace right now. But as I said earlier, we are going towards peace, and we are so appreciative that he has made a decision to step down. Because when we're going to Juba, we don't want someone who is weak like him. We want someone who is strong, who is able to tell Salva Kiir this is wrong.
So where are we on the new peace deal? Is everything working out fine?
Security-wise, I can see there has been quite an improvement because the guns have gone silent really for quite some time now. But we still know that the government is planning evil to make sure they derail the peace agreement. I can see they're trying to lure some confusing agents to interrupt some parties here and there.
So when do you think Dr. Riek Machar and your people will be coming to Juba?
The military team will be deployed to Juba after being trained and unified together with the government. That was our call, and that is what is going to happen. But with Dr. Riek, it will be after 8 months. Before that, there is no way we'll allow Dr. Riek Machar to go to Juba, because anything can happen in the middle. Want to make sure that, okay, what happened in 2016 doesn't happen again this time.
Thank you always for speaking with us on Daybreak Africa.
Thank you, too.
Colonel Lam Paul Gabriel is the Deputy Military Spokesman for the SPLA-IO of South Sudan. He was speaking with me from the Ugandan capital, Kampala. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 21st. And please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is now 17 minutes past the hour. First Lady Melania Trump is planning her first big solo international trip with a visit to several African countries in October this year. Melania Trump's spokeswoman, Stephanie Gresham, said the First Lady chose Africa for her first major solo international trip after she learned about some of the development programs that are underway in many of its countries, especially in children's health and education. President Donald Trump, who has not visited Africa since taking office, will not accompany the First Lady, according to the Associated Press, which first reported news of the trip. The president created a global outcry when he reportedly used the term shithole countries when speaking about immigrants from Haiti, El Salvador, and African nations. He has since denied making the remarks. Zimbabwe's main opposition leader, Nelson Chamisa, has appealed to African leaders to ensure a peaceful and smooth transition of power in the country. Chamisa is contesting the legality of the ruling party's victory in the July 30th election. As Columbus Mavunga reports from Harare, analysts say his appeal may have been filed a bit too late.
Nelson Chamisa, Zimbabwe's main opposition leader, told reporters Monday he was confident the country's highest court would overturn the official results for the July 30th presidential election. Zimbabwe's Electoral Commission declared President Emmerson Mnangagwa won the poll with just under 51% of the vote. It said Chamisa, the leader of Zimbabwe's opposition Movement for Democratic Change, MDC Alliance, finished second with 44%. Chamisa called those results a subversion of the will of the people. He welcomed a decision by the Southern African Development Community, SADC, not to yet congratulate Mnangagwa when they met in Namibia over the weekend.
And this is the message I have to SADC. Please help us help the African continent and help ourselves by making sure that you help us heal the division that is in the country, to cure the illegitimacy, to cure the crisis that we have, the electoral stalemate. SADC, come in and start to help us negotiate a respectable exit for Mr. Mnangagwa, a respectable exit for those who have been voted out. To SADC, you are the guarantors of peace, the guardians of prosperity and progress and freedom. It is important to make sure that you have a hands-on approach on the Zimbabwean situation.
Alexander Rusero is a senior journalism and international politics lecturer at Harare Polytechnic College. He says Chamisa's appeal to African bodies like the African Union should have come immediately after Zimbabwe's election.
The opposition were a little bit slow to embrace and make meaningful diplomatic conduct with the critical regional organizations like SADC and the AU, and instead running to America, running to Britain. In terms of diplomacy, you don't negotiate from outside. They have displayed the arrogance and the contempt and disregard for SADC and the AU.
The 40-year-old Chamisa refused to commit accepting the ruling of the court if he loses his election petition, as many observers say is likely. He said the MDC alliance would instead follow all legal and constitutional routes available to appeal the election results. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare.
Sierra Leone President Julius Maada Bio has officially launched the country's free education program for primary and secondary school children. The president first announced the program in May this year in fulfillment of his campaign promise. In launching the program on Monday, he said the government will pay for tuition and teaching materials. President Bio also donated three of his monthly salaries toward the program and warned he would fine or even jail any parent who failed to send their children to school. Information Minister Mohamed Rahman Suare says President Bio wants to empower the next generation of leaders through education.
Speaker after speaker at the launching lauded the initiative and paid glowing tribute to President Bio for what many described as an overdue action. In his response, he noted that his commitment was born out of his passion to ensure that every Sierra Leonean child had an equal opportunity to realize their fullest potential. He also noted that he sees education not as an end in itself, but as a means to an end. He believes he has to empower the next generation of leaders.
From the day that the president announced that he was introducing free education, the question people have been asking was, how is Sierra Leone going to pay for this?
Since we took over government, we inherited a country on the verge of bankruptcy, but still we have managed to hold it together. We are regrowing the economy. We have blocked leakages. We are increasing our domestic revenue mobilizations. We are very prudent in our expenditure. And today at the launch, First Lady, Her Excellency, Madam Fatima Bio, also launched the Multi-Donor Trust Fund, where donors, development partners, the private sector made impressive donations and pledges. And it is very instructive to note that the Chief Minister, in his address, Professor David Francis, noted that Sierra Leoneans want to be in the driving seat of their development agenda. It is for that reason that government ministers made generous pledges and donations to support and sustain the free education program. The high point of the occasion was President Bio's personal donation of his 3 month salary as his contribution towards sustaining and supporting the free education program.
According to the president, the government will cover what? Tuition, fees, and teaching materials. What did he say will be the role of the parents?
He noted parents should continue to perform their traditional parenting responsibilities by ensuring that the children after school have enough time to rest, have an enabling study environment, ensure that they study their notes, do their assignments, and over and above all, the students who have their own responsibilities to ensure that they stay focused, they stay attentive, and learn as much as they could in school.
Did the president say that the government will fine or even jail any parent who did not ensure that their child or their children were in school?
Well, the president did not say so. He references to the 2004 Education Act, which stipulates that every Union kid should be in school. Any parent who, for their own selfish or personal reason, their children off school to sell wares for them on the streets is committing an offense for which they should be prosecuted and, if found guilty, fined a particular amount and a fine, both of them. He made that clear that any parent that defaults on this might be prosecuted and could face either a jail time or fine, you know, a stipulated fine by a found guilty. So yes, he spoke very because he is passionate about ensuring that it empowers the next generation of leaders through schooling.
Mr. Minister, thank you very much again for joining us on Daybreak Africa. Thank you.
Thank you very much, James. It's always a pleasure.
Mohamed Raik Manswaru is Sierra Leone's Information Minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Journalists working on Mozambique or in Mozambique are scheduled to start paying what may be the highest registration fees in the world as of tomorrow, Wednesday. The new fees have been widely criticized, with Human Rights Watch calling them outrageous and Amnesty International saying they will keep the media from reporting on Mozambique. For example, a foreign correspondent living in the country will have to pay $8,300 and a new national radio station will be charged $3,500. Arnold Frazzi is with Reporters Without Borders.
At Reporters Without Borders, we think that this is completely exorbitant and out of any reasonable proportion. It affects those media outlets with very high license fees that are very likely to kill off lots of Mozambican radios and TV channels, and journalists as well. We're not going to be able to pay the price to report. I mean, who is going to pay about $2,500 to go reporting for a week or two in Mozambique? Is there any foreign freelance reporter willing to pay about $8,500 to settle in Mozambique? We really fear that the country may become a kind of a foreign media desert.
This seems to be an effort to discourage reporting from the country. Do you think that it will be effective then?
Oh, yes. Very much. It will very likely discourage foreign correspondents from visiting Mozambique. It will dramatically prevent journalists from covering very important issues in the country, such as the decreasing security situation in the north, for example, or even maybe the next general elections that are scheduled for October next year.
So other countries do charge some fees. Are these the highest that you have heard of?
For sure, there is no country in the region that has higher fees for foreign correspondents to settle in a country.
Do you feel that this is part of the general crackdown on reporting in Africa and elsewhere?
Well, it's hard to tell, but what we can notice is that there is a crackdown in this region. When you look at it closely, in the past few months in Tanzania, for example, the country has adopted recently online regulation that makes website owners and blog editors to pay for license and fees for an average cost of $900 a year, which is a lot in this country. When you look at Uganda in the region, Uganda recently installed a social media tax, and this social media tax is still in place, and it's really stifled the media.
Is there anything that can be done about this?
Well, what we are asking is that the Mozambican authorities to repeal, of course, this decree and to avoid any significant economic pressure that could seriously prevent both the media and the journalists from producing and disseminating information. And we are also encouraging local NGOs and local partners to mobilize against these kind of taxes or decrees or any kind of economic pressure, because we really think, for example, that in Mozambique, this is even unconstitutional.
That was Arnold Frazé of Reporters Without Borders speaking from Paris with viewers Paul Alexander. And that's it for this Tuesday, August 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, producer Nicole Beckford and reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, I'm James Botti in Washington saying have a good day.
VOA Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA, your trusted source for news and information.